Hello and welcome to our program Fortune, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Shama, and during the next half hour I will be reading articles from the Fortune November 2020 issue here on Owl Radio. During this selection I'd like to cover the Keurig. We've all heard of Keurig, which is the coffee machine, and in this particular article by Sean Tully, Keurig is a machine. From coffee pods to Dr. Pepper, the beverage giant has leveraged an AI-fueled growth strategy during the pandemic, and it's closing in on Coke and Pepsi. The next article I'd like to cover is in the technology section. It's a powerful tool for trade hawks that is being implemented, and during this issue they also had 50 of the most powerful women and the new face on Wall Street, so perhaps we can cover a few of those on the list. Well, let's start with the article by Sean Tully. Keurig is a machine. For decades, the worlds of cold and hot beverages in the United States have remained separate domains, each dominated by undisputed champions. In carbonated soft drinks, Coca-Cola and PepsiCo have long shared almost three-quarters of the market, while Starbucks has reigned as the place to go for coffee. None of the three stalwarts are even lukewarm about combining hot and cold segments in a big way. But in a beverage market as roiled as every other part of the consumer economy is this year, a surprise winner, little known Keurig Dr. Pepper, is taking gallons of market share. Though KDP is less than half the size of Coke and Pepsi in U.S. soft drinks, it is running neck and neck with the two giants in the share of the extra cans and bottles thirsty stay-at-home Americans are quaffing versus last year. In the 20-week period ended July 26th, KDP has grabbed 34.1% of the $1.4 billion increase in revenue for all U.S. carbonated soft drinks, according to Consumer Edge. That boosted its overall market share from 22.7% to 24%. KDP has done the best job of any beverage company in navigating the crisis, says Consumer Edge analyst Brett Cooper. KDP's rise is especially remarkable because it's a new enterprise formed just over 2 years ago via the $18.7 billion merger of coffee purveyor Keurig Green Mountain and soda maker Dr. Pepper Snapple. The deal was a giant bet that by assembling and promoting a broad portfolio of classic names and high-growth newcomers in categories much smaller than that of Coke or Pepsi's or Starbucks coffee brand, KDP would create a business more powerful than the sum of its parts. That strategy is the brainchild of KDP's CEO, Bob Gamgort, an industry lifer who revived two struggling franchises, Pinnacle Foods and Keurig Green Mountain, but whose ultimate dream was building what he bills as the first modern beverage company. We backed Bob with a total of $17 billion, first when we bought Keurig and brought him in as CEO, then when we bought Dr. Pepper Snapple, said Oliver Gaudet, CEO of Jab, the Luxembourg holding company that has also assembled a coffee empire in Europe. And that one is backed by Reimanns, one of Germany's wealthiest families, and along with minority partners, holds 44% of KDP shares. It was all a wager on Bob, because He knew choosing hot or cold was getting only half of the picture. He sees consumer patterns changing before anyone else. Over several long phone conversations, Gamgort described his blueprint to fortune. The industry viewed beverages much too narrowly, he says. Over half of Starbucks drinks have ice in them. When someone needs a boost in the afternoon, they may choose a coffee or a Dr. Pepper or our adrenaline shock energy drink. Yet the industry and Wall Street looked at hot and cold as two completely different segments. When we merged, no one got it. His goal, he explains, was to create the broadest possible lineup. We need to be as important as possible to a Walmart or Amazon. And we get there by offering a portfolio that meets every consumer need, says Gamgort, who's 58 years old. At $11.1 billion in revenue last year, KDP ranked as the seventh largest food and beverage company in America. But the company has cornered something that has proved elusive to companies in the best of times, but especially during a pandemic. A broad, diversified portfolio that has churned out predictable earnings. For the first 6 months of 2020, revenues rose a sturdy 3% to $5.5 billion. While adjusted profits jumped 11.7% to $877 million. By contrast, Coke's income dropped 15.4% from January to June, and Pepsi's earnings were down 6% in the two quarters ending in mid-June. While KDP stuck to its earnings guidance, pledging to meet 3-4% revenue and 13-15% earnings per share targets set in 2020, the fog of COVID prompted Coke, Starbucks, and most other food and beverage players to declare the market was too mercurial to forecast. Gamgort was gaining on the giants pre-COVID and had a feeling that the crisis would work in his favor, but only if the company pivoted fast and accepted that the future was different and that what consumers wanted was changing, probably for good. We did not think the world would return to normal, he says. We forged a blueprint that makes disruption our friend. The first signal that we were living in a new world came in early March from KDP's connected panels, the 10,000 at-home brewers linked electronically to its data centers. It was Gamgort who introduced the panels as part of his Keurig Green Mountain Rescue Plan. The connected brewers read the image of every K-cup pod to identify the branch and flavor using visual recognition technology so that KDP sees instantly any change in the daily cups families are drinking. And the names and blends they prefer. We saw this minute-by-minute data showing people were leaving the cities and sheltering in place and that coffee consumption was through the roof, says Gamgort. That data from the at-home coffee side also showed what was coming in soft drinks. We knew few people would be stopping to buy drinks at gas stations or local stores or in restaurants, says Gamgort. He immediately anticipated that the stay-at-home economy, families would be stockpiling soda by purchasing what they could buy big quantities in a single trip at the mega stores such as Walmart and Kroger. We predicted they want big packs of cans because they're easiest to store in the garage. Cans stay fresher than bottles, and the kids and adults can pull one can out at a time. The rub was that Gamgort saw no way his domestic can suppliers could possibly make enough of them. Miraculously, the Mexican government declared beer a non-essential product, shuttering factories and leaving the local can makers with loads of capacity. We pounced on that opportunity. We told the producers in Mexico, we'll take all the cans you can give us. Competitors ran out of cans, and we got the cans. KDP ramped up production of 12 packs of cardboard-bound 12-ounce cans and cut back on bottles. KDP employs a direct store delivery or DSD model, meaning that in three quarters of the nation, KDP's 6,000 trucks deliver shipments from 160 distribution centers directly to stores as varied as 7-Eleven to Kroger. Then a KDP merchandiser wields a U-boat cart carrying the brands to the beverage aisle and personally stocks the shelves. The merchandisers often visit a big store several times a week for 3 or 4 hours. They transmit up to the minute updates on what's selling and how fast to the KDP centers. If you just ship to the retailer's warehouse, you don't get that kind of data and don't realize for another week what's selling. By then, it's too late. Other trends were emerging too. Demand for classics such as Canada Dry Ginger Ale and A&W Root Beer took off. We cranked up the bestsellers and made a lot less of the slow-moving varieties, said Holland Lujan, who heads KDP's distribution network in the South. Factories cut way back on Cherry, 7-Up, and Dirt Diet Squirt. But the swing to big sellers made the merchandisers more productive. The pallets that used to contain 55 separate items were carrying as few as 15 in much bigger quantities, cutting the time required to stock shelves. Coffee followed the same pattern. The company's Keurig brewers are the bargain razor, sold near break-even to lure customers to the lucrative blades. KDP's Cape Cup pods. KDP produces an estimated 10 billion plus pods a year, an astounding 82% of the total market. It buys and grinds the coffee, fills the pods, and distributes to stores both for brands it owns, led by Green Mountain and Original Donut Shop, and under some two dozen names it licenses, among them McDonald's, McAfee, Newman's Own, and Krispy Kreme. It also packs the pods for Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts. Once Gamgort saw customer pod usage spike, I turned our factories to maximum output, way in advance of retail orders. We were watching inventories build when we hadn't seen any sales yet. The connected brewers also showed that people were drinking much more premium coffee, perhaps because when you're not getting a $3 cup at Starbucks, you find spending 70 cents on a gourmet K-cup reasonable. Once again, KDP greatly increased production of such staples as Green Mountain and temporarily halted production in niche brands. At the peak, at-home K-Cup pod sales were running 30% higher than last year, an extraordinary number for a product that grows in the mid-single digits. The question now for the self-professed challenger is how to achieve strong growth in two slow to modestly expanding businesses. So far, KDP has managed to translate revenues, waxing at around 3%, into adjusted earnings. But it's generating those outsized leaps in profits chiefly by lowering expenses and reaping up big savings from the mergers. When cost cutting runs its course by the close of 2021, Gamgort will need to garner much higher revenue growth. He wants sales growth of 5-6% a year. Not the couple of points a year that are the norm in the business, says Paul Michaels, a KDP director and former global producer of Mars, where he was Gamgort's boss and mentor in the 2000s. In beverages, that's a high bar. It's likely that KDP will give back at least part of the big 1% plus gain in market share that its jackrabbit moves one in the pandemic, something Wall Street anticipates as evidenced by the stock flatline performance over the past year. But looking ahead, Gamgort has several things working in his favor. First, starting around 2021, KDP will have retired enough debt that it can use its formidable free cash purchasing and growing brands in the past. He built Mars pet food franchise to rival Ralston Purina's, though Mars and he revitalized Pinnacle's purchases of Birds Eye Vegetables, Evol Natural Meals and Guardian, making a plant-based protein foods. Second, Gamgort recognized that getting Keurig brewers in more households was what growing K-Cup pods was all about. He sharply cut the prices of the cups and machines, and in the process doubled the quantity. The number of U.S. homes with brewers to the current 31 million, and that represents about 1 in 4 households. It leaves plenty of room to run. In Europe, over 50% of all homes have brewers, and here the changes in customer taste in the preference are likely to stick. Third, the flavors sector, or those selected, aren't colas. It is already a growing or more faster growing segment than soft drinks as whole, adding new flavors to the old line brands. Two promising entries off to fast starts are Spicy Canada Dry Bold and Dr. Pepper and Cream Soda. The fourth lever is called Allied Brands, which acquires names typically owned by the entrepreneurs or private players. Think Adrenaline Shoe, a sports drink invented by beverage legend Lance Collins, or Don't Quit, which is a protein shake from Jake, Body by Jake, Seinfeld. In the past, the old Dr. Pepper Snapple would distribute such brands but didn't secure the rights to buy them if they took off, and would often lose out to Coke or another big bidder. Once again, Gamgort broke the mold. He'll offer to make a new beverage an allied brand only if the new beverage and the new owner agrees to give KDP the right to purchase it based on a predetermined formula. But perhaps the best thing Gamgort has going for him is that he's embracing rather than dreading the uncertainty that lies ahead. Our rivals are quo returns, and it's not returning, he says. Their paradigm busting audacity has given KDP the best caffeine buzz in beverages. So that is KDP and Keurig. Next, I'd like to read to you a powerful tool for trade hawks. The battle over TikTok has focused attention on CFIUS, which is a secretive federal committee with the power to scuttle foreign investments in U.S. businesses. Some critics say that power is being abused by Jeff John Roberts. This summer, when the Trump administration ordered the popular social media app TikTok to sell its U.S. operations, it marked a new escalation in the U.S.-China trade war. The clash also introduced much of the general public, including lip-syncing teens and their parents, to a secretive body called CFIUS. The Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States, which can block or unwind foreign acquisitions of U.S. assets in the name of national security. CFIUS will have final sign-off on a proposed deal to deliver partial control over TikTok to a coalition of U.S. investors and companies, including Oracle and Walmart. Once an obscure nook in the Washington's regulatory labyrinth, CFIUS has grown dramatically in power and influence in recent years, as Congress beefed up its mandate as part of a technological arms race with China and other rivals. Its widening ambit could redefine the relationship between foreign companies and the U.S. government. But the TikTok saga, which could see a prominent supporter of President Trump obtain a big stake in the app, is also stoking a backlash among critics who see CFIUS as a powerful tool for crony capitalism. CFIUS was established in 1975 by President Ford to safeguard strategic industries like oil and minerals from foreign control. For decades, it rarely invoked Brian Fleming, a former national security lawyer for them, said. Justice for the Justice Department, who is now an attorney at Miller and Chevalier, he estimates that the Obama and Trump administrations blocked fewer than one deal a year between 2009 and 17. The pace accelerated, however, as Trump administration adopted a more bellicose stance on China and as lawmakers across the political spectrum grew more worried about data, patents, and tech expertise passing out of U.S. control. In 2018, CFIUS stopped China's Ant Financial from buying money transfer services MoneyGram and scuttled an effort by Singapore-based Broadcom to acquire chip giant Qualcomm. The same year, Congress passed the Foreign Investment Risk Review Modernization Act, which is FIRMA. That law not only expanded CFIUS's enforcement powers, but also gave it a new mandate to protect U.S. consumer data, such as that collected by TikTok and its Chinese parent company, ByteDance. The advent of Firma has triggered a stampede of CFIUS actions. The review process is highly secretive, but according to the Washington Post, the panel has launched dozens of investigations this year alone, aimed primarily at companies that received investments from China or Russia. Some probes retroactively examine deals completed years ago. The TikTok investigation, for example, rose out of ByteDance's 2017 purchase of a Los Angeles-based company called Musical.ly. CFIUS is composed of the chiefs of 9 federal agencies headed by the Secretary of the State, the Secretary of the Treasury. It can intervene in any deal involving foreign investors in which there are national security competitions and concerns, a rationale that can extend to nearly any transaction lawyers object to. While social media platforms like TikTok and Tencent, WeChat have been the most prominent recent targets, other industries are in the panel's crosshairs. Nivana Simidzinska, co-chair of the International Trade Group of the Fox Rothschild LLP, which he has seen an uptick in CFIUS's work, says the model games industry, which has many ties to China, is likely to be next. CFIUS investigates into their corporate rivals, and US companies can lean on CFIUS to block a deal or unwind it retroactively. In this new climate, lawyers say companies are increasingly taking steps to avoid CFIUS scrutiny. Some might structure deals in a way that foreign investors have only a passive role with no board seats or executive presence. Others simply decline Chinese investments altogether. And in some cases, companies quietly pull the plug on a planned deal upon learning that CFIUS intends to make a negative recommendation to the president. While firms have we broken the fourth wall when it comes to CFIUS and entered a bold new world where the president can intervene and meddle in a way no one envisioned? Asked Fleming, the former Justice Department lawyer. With this president, all bets are off. It remains to be seen whether the TikTok affair is a one-off and rather the enmeshing of geopolitics and business would continue under a different president of similar party. Since its creation in 1975, CFIUS has slowly evolved from a regulatory footnote to a trade war weapon. Some key dates from the pre-TikTok era. So in 1988, it was growing teeth and concerned over Japan's tech prowess. Congress gives CFIUS the power to reject foreign investments. In 1990, that deal won't fly because George Bush administration uses CFIUS to order a Chinese firm to divest Mamco, a manufacturing and Seattle-based aircraft parts maker. In 2006, Shape Up or Ship Out, the Dubai Ports World Consortium strikes a deal to obtain control of six U.S. seaports, and CFIUS approves the plan, but Congress votes to block it. 2012, blowing in the wind, President Obama orders Chinese-owned RailCorp to divest wind turbines it acquired near a Navy site in Oregon. And in 2018, the art of no deal, President Trump evokes CFIUS to bar Singapore-based Broadcom from carrying out a $117 billion hostile takeover of chipmaker Qualcomm. So that is the story of a powerful tool for trade hawks, CFIUS. Dear listeners, I thank you for listening to today's OWL Radio. You can listen to our show on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience at our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Once again, thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Shama saying goodbye from OWL Radio.